Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here, flying solo with Justin Cavender. How you doing, boy?
I just said there were two of them. I'm doing great. Thank you very much. How are you, my friend?
I am doing amazing. Unfortunately, Randy Van Dykovich will not be joining us for this podcast. He is in NAB, up in Las Vegas, learning all about new cool camera gear and stuff like that. So hopefully he's listening to this. And Randy, if you are, thanks for listening. And to follow up on our list from last week of Spielberg films, they determined that it was, in fact, Jaws was the number one Spielberg film of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Proving that you are dumb.
And I am correct.
And you are correct. For those who care, number one was Jaws, two was Jurassic Park, and number three was Raiders of the Lost Ark. All three amazing films, at least people with rational thought would say. One of us that's not here, who shall not be named, who's called Randy, decided that Jaws was not a top 10 Spielberg film.
I don't remember what my... I remember Jaws and Jurassic Park, but I don't remember what the third one was. For me.
Did you go Raiders? Did you go E.T.?
Oh, I went E.T. I went E.T. And then probably...
Last Crusade?
Last Crusade. Sorry. John Blake.
My number one is Hook. And then...
No, it's not.
Then The Terminal.
You wish.
No, of course, E.T. E.T. is one of my favorite non-Star Wars film of all time.
Yeah, that's a good one. But you could argue it is kind of a Star Wars film.
You definitely could. It was not created as a Star Wars film.
Well,
that's true. E.T. clearly knows Yoda. Like, he walks by Yoda, and E.T.'s like, hey, I know you.
Yeah, you owe me $5.
And he uses the Force.
Yes.
A bicycle.
And he's got a red Charlie bit my finger kind of thing going on.
He does. Ouch.
Speaking of ouch, what do you think of the new Solo trailer?
The first time I saw it, I didn't really like it the first time. Like, I mean, I shouldn't say I didn't like it. Like, first time I saw it, I was like,
this is crap.
Well, because I've been pretty high on the Solo train as of late. You know, I'm real high on Donald Glover as Lando, and the idea that Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote the script, has been real big into like expanding universe characters showing up or using characters that we may not have seen a lot of before. So I was pretty sky high. And the first time I saw it, I was left a little disappointed. But having seen it a couple times now, I'm like, this is pretty cool. I'm 100% on board and ready for it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm excited. I know that once the time comes and I'm sitting in my chair at the theater and I realize that, yes, I am watching another Star Wars movie, I'm going to be pretty excited. I don't really like the whole part of the trailer where he's like, I'm a driver, I'm a flyer. like, given his little resume, I was like, all right, cool your jets, fly boy.
He's like, I often shoot second.
That's funny.
It would, it'll be interesting to see. I think a lot of people are kind of dismissing this film, and I think this will kind of be one of those like sneaky ones. Like, we won't see the $276 trillion openings, but I could see this one having more legs. You know, to where it'll have a more modest, you know, like $100 million opening. I say modest $100 million, but for Star Wars, having like $100 million opening and then just not really dropping that dramatically in the box office over the next couple weeks, as word of mouth spreads that you probably should see this movie. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I feel like Avengers is just going to be in the theater all summer long and just raking in the dough.
Yeah. I think that Avengers is going to play on like every screen at every movie theater. Like, I think they're going to take like every movie. Like, it's going to be like three other movies out. They're going to each have like one screen. And they're going to go to these like 30 theater megaplexes. And it's going to be like Avengers on 27 screens. All sold out.
Right. So if you want to go watch A Quiet Place, you better do that now before Avengers comes out.
That's right. Well, good segue, because Fandango is reporting that the Avengers Infinity War has pre-sold more tickets than the last seven Marvel movies put together. That's counting Black Panther, which broke the record that was set by Civil War, which is also counted in this. So the top two highest grossing like pre-sell movies really of all time are being trounced combined by this one movie. And wow. So Force Awakens did $247 million its first weekend. It's still the undisputed king of first weekend. Do you think that number is going to fall to Avengers Infinity War?
I don't know, man. That's tough. I always thought that Star Wars was the all-time super mega franchise and nothing could ever touch it. Both in my heart and at the box office.
I mean, it's true. I mean, Force Awakens is far and away the domestic box office champ, and I have trouble thinking anything will catch it, but I never thought anything would catch Titanic. But
right, that's true. That's true. I mean, I don't know. I never really buy. So here's it. It's possible it could give it a run for its money because I never buy pre-sale tickets. And 2 days ago, I bought my Avengers ticket on Fandango. I paid the $1.30 convenience fee or whatever, and did it. I took the plunge, and I'm going to go see it by myself so I can just enjoy it and not worry about anybody else, and I'm really looking forward to that.
It's funny you mentioned seeing it by yourself and not worrying about other people's enjoyment. I find that, like, if I've seen a movie and then I try to watch it with somebody else, like, I get really annoyed if they're not giving it 100% of their attention. Like, if I'm at home watching a movie with my wife that I know is great, and if she, like, checks her phone or something like that, I find myself getting really irked. I'm like, you're missing the movie.
Yeah, it's funny.
I think that's what goes to the... I think that's the biggest plus of the theatrical experience, is that you're immersed in that film, and you're... I don't want to say trapped, because trapped has a negative connotation, but you're kind of forced to give 100% of your attention to the film. You know, and it's not allowed to bust out your phone or do something else, to where... I think that's really the big selling point of the theater, is its ability to just keep your entire focus on the film, and so you can enjoy it instead of looking down and then realizing you missed something important, either have to rewind it or you get up to go to the bathroom, or you pause it, or you take a phone call or something like that. There's something to be said about watching a movie in the theater, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially when as... grandioso as an Avengers film. But having said that, when it is sort of the summer blockbuster time, that is when I get my big old bucket of popcorn and my giant soda, and the idea of sitting through 2.5 hours without having to go to the bathroom after drinking said soda, I get a little concerned.
You gotta pace yourself.
Yeah, I know, and it's terrible because I get so antsy on a movie like this, where let's just say that you're at a theater where you cannot reserve your seat, so you gotta go early, right, to get the seat that you want, and there's nothing else to do, so you just kind of start eating your popcorn early. So I would advise getting your concessions at the last minute, because you still have 40 minutes of trailers to sit through.
Now, how is the scene up in Washington as far as reserve seating? Are most theaters gone to reserve seating now, or is it still the majority, the lineup and first come, first serve?
So there are three theaters that I tend to go to. The one closest to my house does not do reserve seating, but the other two do. One's I pick, sort of the glamorous movie experience with the recliners and such. And then the other is just sort of your regular Regal theater, but it does have reserve seating. That one's just a little bit further away. It's not far. I mean, it's, you know, 10, 15 minutes most, but there's one that's 3 minutes away, so why don't I just go to that theater instead?
Right. No, makes sense. Yeah, no, in Southern California, I'd say that, like, it seems like every day movie theaters are closing to retrofit to the recliners, to where, you know, within, you know, a 10-minute drive of my house, there's probably, like, 11 movie theaters that are all recliners. All the reserve seating and stuff like that. So just curious if that was just because of where we are, or if it was kind of the trend, because I love the reserve seating. Like, just get there, you know, 2 minutes before the movie theater, knowing that your seats, like, I mean, I remember, you know, we waited in line all day for Revenge of the Sith, or you did, or waiting in line overnight to see freaking Phantom Menace. So yeah, reserve seating is definitely the way to go.
The thing is, yeah, so reserve seating is definitely cool, but the recliners, it's hard for me, man, because if I'm comfortable, I might fall asleep. Fell asleep during Spider-Man Homecoming, fell asleep during Alien Covenant. I almost fell asleep during Transformers, and that's giant robots destroying the world. How am I supposed to fall asleep with all that noise going on? and it almost happened. I was concerned. But I don't know. It's just one of those things. If I'm too comfortable, I'm going to pass out.
Yeah, I think I found the sweet spot to where I don't go all the way back. I go back just far enough and to where I'm nice and I'm comfortable, but I'm too tall for most of them, so my feet always dangle off the edge if I go all the way back. So, plus I always got my soda pop, so you know,
yeah,
that keeps me awake.
Yeah,
and I love boops.
I gotta spike mine with a Monster,
or some crystal meth.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. But yeah, it should be interesting to see if Avengers Infinity War is able to best The Force Awakens. It's a pretty tall order, but I think that in recent memory, this is the movie that probably has the best shot of potentially unseating The Force Awakens for the domestic crown. But I think that Avengers is going to be hurt by its release date, being that there's so many movies coming out so shortly after it. You know, we have Deadpool, then we have Solo, and then we go right into summer, and to where that was the thing about Force Awakens, that there was nothing come out in the movie theaters for like 6 weeks after it, so it was like the king for a while.
Right, and it was Christmas time, so people are on their vacations, and it's family time, so families are going together.
Yeah, which that's what makes it even stranger that they insisted on putting Solo out in May. Mm-hmm. You know, Star Wars had owned Christmas. Why change it?
I don't know.
But the one good thing about them making it May is that now there's 18 months between Star Wars movies. And while, yes, that is a long time, you know, we used to have to wait 3 years. And I think that's what made Star Wars a little special, is that they made us wait. It's kind of like Halo versus Call of Duty, to where Call of Duty is great. But, you know, every year, you know, you're going to get a new one. So it's where it's an event that a new Call of Duty game comes out. When Halo came out, you know, it was a huge deal because you only got one every couple years. You know, it's been many years now since we've had a Halo game, to where it feels a little more special, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I liked Rogue One. that was at Christmas time. I was like, oh yeah, this is good.
Nothing to get you all warm and cozy for the holiday than watching a Strike Force get massacred.
Yeah, no kidding.
One at a time.
What did I just watch? I watched something that had Felicity Jones. Theory of Everything. I just watched that for the first time over the weekend. And it was pretty good.
You watched Three of Everything?
The Theory of Everything.
Oh, the Stephen Hawking movie?
Yeah.
With it?
Yeah. I had never seen it.
So. I didn't realize he was such a pimp.
Yeah. I know. That's another thing. I didn't realize... This is going to be weird, but I didn't know a whole lot about Stephen Hawking's personal life. And so I was completely surprised when he got the divorce and he wanted to go to America with the other lady.
Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not a very heroic thing to do.
Yeah. I was, I was thrown off by that. So.
Yeah. Same thing. I knew he was obviously a incredibly intelligent scientist, but I had no idea that, you know, that he had left his wife for someone else. I didn't even know he had kids. I didn't know anything.
You're like, he's British, but he talks like a robot. I didn't know that.
Talk like C-3PO.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy. Adorable, though. I really like the Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah, he got his Oscar for it. Academy Award winner, Eddie Redmayne, and then he went on to be Newt Scamander.
Yeah, it's kind of the same characteristics of the young Stephen Hawking. Like, I saw a lot of Newt in that early stages of his life. I was like, huh, he's the same guy. Interesting. I didn't mean to derail us, but I did see the movie. I know you liked it, and it was actually pretty good.
Nice. And I'll even derail us a little bit further, so... My younger son is taking a real active love of film, which I'm trying to encourage because I also love film. And so we've been watching a lot of movies together. So like we watched all the Harry Potter movies, and now we're working our way through the Jurassic Park movies. And so we watched Lost World of Jurassic Park. And you know what? That movie's not that bad. Like, I remember just, like, hating it. And watching it with my kid, I'm like, first of all, your kids are going to be bored to shit with it. Because, like, the first, like, hour is all just, like, adults talking about why dinosaurs should be saved or why we should monetize dinosaurs. It's like, I could see my son, like, fighting his interest. But as an adult, it was actually really, really interesting, especially in today's, you know, era of conservation-minded adults. But there's some actual, like, big themes in that. And aside from, you know, the chaos in San Diego, which I love for a completely different reason, the movie actually is pretty good. It's it definitely moved up a couple ranks in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't seen Lost World in a long time, I urge you guys to go out and just watch it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I like the hunter guy, Roland Tembo. I mean, I hate hunting in general, but his character was just fearless, and I really like that. Like he was out of his element, but he never knew it. He was just like, "Fuck that! I'm here. I'm gonna take down T-Rex." I loved his. He wasn't even a bad guy, which is weird because typically when I think of that role, I think of like the Tarzan route, you know, where there's like that guy that wants to shoot a silverback. But he wasn't that way. Like he was definitely different, and he was kind of heroic, especially when he was there to save them as the RV was falling off the cliff. You're like, oh, so he's not a bad guy? It was kind of weird.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to kill. He doesn't kill the T-Rex. He just captures it. And he's like, oh, I won.
Yeah, that's it. That's his mentality. I love that.
Yeah, and then at the end, they're like trying to give him like a position. He's like, nah, I'm already bored with you guys.
Yeah, you're a bunch of fucks. Not interested.
I'll go do something else.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna go be Batman because Jake Gyllenhaal says he's not gonna be Batman.
Oh.
Which is kind of a bummer. I could see Jake Gyllenhaal being one of those actors who can pull off both Batman and Bruce Wayne, just with his intensity that he plays a lot of his roles. And he seemed to have been kind of the forefront of all discussions about Batman. So, what did you think about a Jake Gyllenhaal Batman? And are you sad that he's saying he's not going to be Batman? And do you believe him?
Ooh, I don't know if I believe him per se. Because it's worded in a way where he's not going to be Matt Reeves' Batman. And if Warner Brothers is doing this whole restructuring of the Batman universe, or just the DC universe, then it makes sense for him to still have a Batman role, just not this Batman role.
Ooh. That's not like any kind of publicist to like put out contradictory stories there.
right, and he was fucking ripped in Southpaw. I mean, he can do the build. He's got the acting chops. He can do the role. I never pictured him as Batman, but after, you know, looking at it in a new way, sure, I think he could totally pull it off. If someone said, "Who's my choice for Batman?" I would have never in a million years said Jake Gyllenhaal, but yeah. I believe it.
Yeah, I think Warner Bros. Just needs to get this Batman movie out, man. They there's just been too many stops and starts, and this person doesn't want to be it, this person wants it, this person's fighting, these people aren't getting along. Like, I mean, they just need to get a Batman movie out, like, and make a badass Batman movie. Just let Matt Reeves, he obviously knows what he's doing, and everyone loves Cloverfield, you know, these ape movies. I mean, like, he got us to care about a goddamn ape. Like, not even a real ape, like a computer-generated ape will make you cry.
Right.
I mean, and so if a director can do that out of an ape that most of us didn't care about before, imagine what he could do in, like, a character piece about Batman. Let him make an old Batman. Let's do not necessarily Dark Knight Returns, but, like, an older Batman. Let's bring back Michael Keaton as, like, the aging Bruce Wayne Batman. And let's have Mark Hamill today play the Joker.
Oh, man.
Boom. People would see that in droves.
That sounds intense.
Yeah. Or you know what? Let's just go full Batman Beyond and but same thing. Have Michael Keaton come back as old Bruce Wayne to teach McGinnis.
Yeah, I love Batman Beyond. It's so good. And you know what's crazy is I didn't give it a chance when it came out. It wasn't until about 3 years ago that I watched it, and I plowed through every episode. I was like, this is the greatest cartoon ever.
Yeah, and you're not alone. I think that, like, especially the kids, like, maybe 5 or 10 years removed from us, like, they love, that's their Batman the Animated Series to where that word is to us. But, like, I skimmed through it probably, like, 5 years ago, and I'm like, oh, well, that's actually really good. Yeah. I don't see it as much as I thought I would.
Yeah, it was fun.
So let's just get to that.
Yeah. All right. I like the suit, too. When I play the Arkham and Arkham game, I forget which one it was, but I had the suit in it. And I was like, yeah, Batman Beyond, motherfucker.
I'm beyond Batman. Can't stop, won't stop.
Good stuff.
It's like Daniel Craig won't stop. He's going to be Bond one more time.
Oh, no.
All this, will he, won't he? He sold his Aston Martin. He's, like, unloading, like, Bond memorabilia like crazy. And I think everyone was expecting the announcement to come. You know, Daniel Craig's backed out. But clearly the dump truck full of money that they pulled up to his estate was worth it, to where he is going to play James Bond one more time for the 25th installment of the James Bond franchise. You know, we had hoped that Danny Boyle was going to direct it, but I don't know. We haven't heard really anything on that front as of late. We know that his writing partner is doing a pass on the script, so maybe Danny Boyle is still involved. But are you kind of over Daniel Craig as Bond, or do you think he deserves, you know, maybe one last one for like a send-off?
Oh, man, I love Daniel Craig as Bond. I think he's a fantastic Bond, and I love watching him beat the shit out of people on a Jason Statham sort of level. I just hated Spectre. I thought that was one of the worst Bond movies ever made. And it wasn't because of him. It was just a dumb story. And a slow movie. And terrible car chases. All the shit that Bond is known for, it was the complete opposite. And I would love for another opportunity for him to go out there and move, steer that ship in the right direction.
Nice. And, you know, Bond is real big on never really addressing when their actors leave. You know, there's not like, you know, they didn't ever really explain why it went from Roger Moore to Pierce Brosnan or Pierce Brosnan to Daniel Craig. And while that was a popular motif in storytelling, you know, 50 years ago, do you think that method of storytelling will work in today's era, to where we can just have a different actor playing James Bond in the next movie? Or do you think modern audiences need an explanation? You know, they need to know why this has happened.
I don't think so, only because Casino Royale was basically a reboot. You know, it showed him getting his license to kill, which was fantastic, and we hadn't really seen that before. And so, I don't know. I feel like you could just pick up where another actor left off. However, now that I think about it, Casino Royale was, what, 2006? That was a long time ago now. So I guess enough time has passed to do a graceful reboot of the series, and just sort of bookend the Daniel Craig era of Bond, especially if they go another route with it being a minority or a female Bond. It would make way more sense to have a new origin story.
I like it. Considering Bond is already, he's almost reaching Austin Powers levels of, you know, being a man lost in time.
Sure. Yeah.
Sexual innuendos and stuff that doesn't fly. You know, it's good that Bond still partakes in those, and it's seen as kind of just a relic of a bygone era.
Sure. And what it would be even more neat is if they even do it to where, even though he's called 007, what if James Bond wasn't even his name anyway? You know, just in the same sense of a code name like Lancelot or Merlin, like in Kingsman. You know, anybody could be James Bond if you look at it that way.
Except women and minorities, apparently.
That's true. Jamie Bond.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get me wrong, man. They tell me Idris Elba's James Bond, I'm in. I'm like, I could get behind this movie.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see who picks up the mantle of James Bond. Plus, it's been, you know, I think they're cranking these movies out too slow, you know, to where in modern franchise, because when was I mean, Spectre was, what,
2015?
And so this one we're looking like 2019. So, I mean, 4 years. I mean, maybe 2019. They don't even have a script yet.
Yeah, so remember, so the whole thing was, Casino Royale was 2006, and then Quantum of Solace was 2008. Then MGM was borderline bankrupt after that. Not necessarily because of Quantum of Solace, but they just were going through a very rocky era of a studio. And, you know, then they finally get saved, they get their money back, all is well. And then it isn't until 2012, 4 years later, that we get Skyfall, and then they're on back to sort of a three-year sort of time frame, which is respectable for James Bond every 3 years. That's fine. But then, you know, 2019, like you said, for Bond 25, assuming the production isn't marred with delays.
When has that ever happened?
Right.
Well, good luck, Mr. Craig, on your, I guess, what will probably be your final stint as James Bond, and hopefully, hopefully you can make some better career decisions than some of the films that you've been doing.
You mean you didn't like... I liked Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I mean, it was a remake, but it was good.
And still looking good.
I liked the other one with the cowboys and the aliens.
Did you, in fact, like the one with the cowboys and the aliens?
Kinda.
I mean, he was great in Logan Lucky. I will give him that.
I don't know. I don't know.
You know. You know Netflix. You have Netflix. You love Netflix.
I do love Netflix. I wouldn't even, if I saw their logo appear, I would cheer instead of boo.
Yeah, well, then you are the opposite of the audience at the Cannes International Film Festival last year, who notoriously booed anytime the Netflix logo came on before the movies, not judging the movies based on their content, but judging it based off of their hatred for the streaming service because they're all, you know, douchey film snobs. But Netflix has decided to pull all of their content from the Cannes Film Festival this year because the film festival has decided that they would not be eligible for any awards consideration, and Netflix deciding that, you know, we're a pretty big deal. We don't need to be treated like second-class citizens, decided, like, we'll just go home and make our trillions of dollars and let you guys just run your little antiquated film festival. So Netflix says peace out to Cannes. Justin, is this a big deal? Does Cannes matter anymore?
Why did Cannes change the rules to where they cannot get an award?
There's several reasons. They're citing a clause that they've never used before in any of their other products. So the way it works in France is if you see a film, if films that get theatrical releases are not eligible for home releases for 36 months. So if you see a movie and if the movie goes to the movie theater, It's supposed to wait 36 months before it comes to home video. Wow. There are exceptions, you know, obviously movies that are from other countries, like, you know, American movies, like, say, like The Force Awakens. You know, it's an American film, and so since it's released in America early, you know, we have a worldwide economy, a worldwide commerce system like Amazon and stuff like that. They're able to get movies like that earlier, but, like, typical French cinema that goes to the theater, usually it's a 36-month turnaround before they come to home video. Obviously, Netflix cuts that dramatically by putting most of their content up online within months, some of which are already online before they go to the Cannes Film Festival. But it really comes down to exclusivity. The film festivals thrive on being the exclusive release for movies. For example, Solo, a Star Wars film, is going to make its debut at Cannes. So gotcha. The Cannes International Film Festival will be the debut of Solo, and that's a huge deal. You know, Toronto is world renowned for being the launching platform for most major award films. You know, Sundance is they premiere movies that no one's heard of that become these big hits. And so what helps these festivals flourish is by debuting content and being the first to where with Netflix is their own distribution chain, and they don't need a film festival, so they frequently will just drop their stuff very quickly afterwards. So they're just, and, you know, most of the old guard dislike, you know, digital content providers like Netflix.
Ah.
It's an old boys club.
Ah, I see. That's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, Netflix isn't really for the most part, producing awards content. You know, Amazon, you know, they released Manchester by the Sea, and they seem to be more hell-bent on producing kind of that awards-baity kind of content. So where Netflix is just there to entertain us, entertain the masses, which is why we all pay our $11 or whatever it is nowadays.
Dude, I pay even more now because I want to do the 4K.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's like $14 or something. But it's amazing! And I just finished Ozark.
Uh-huh.
And it is incredible. Yeah. Loved it. Holy shit, it was such a good show.
Yeah, I went into it not having any idea what the show was about. And not knowing if I would accept Jason Bateman as, like, the hard ass. But yeah, I left that strip and I'm like, I could watch more of this.
Oh, it's so good. Love it. And I love that character Ruth. I think she grows so much. She develops, like, more than any other character on that show. So good.
Mm-hmm.
Armageddon.
Armageddon, go see it.
Yeah, Ozark. Check it out. And I like the little teaser at the beginning. You know, they always have sort of that cold open, and then it cuts to the logo, and then there's like a little puzzle pieces of what's going to happen in the show. I love spotting that as it happens.
Yeah, it wasn't until like the fifth episode I'm like, oh, these are different.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. I got a wagon, I got a car, I got a cross,
and a ladder. Yeah. It's like I gave a clue. It's great.
This is going to be a tough one.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I remember I binged it a couple months ago, but yeah, it was definitely worth checking out. It's got some twists and some turns.
Yes, some shakeups.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for the end when it just turned into like,
yeah, what? Fucking Wild Wild West and shit.
I'm like, what just happened?
Yeah, good stuff.
Speaking of good stuff, Platinum Dunes, Michael Bay, one of Michael Bay's many production companies that's kind of been working, not exclusively, but almost exclusively in the horror genre. They are the ones behind most of the modern horror remakes that people love slash hate, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Amity Horror, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. They also made like the Purge movies, and they released this week's big champion, A Quiet Place. And probably because of the huge box office of A Quiet Place, they have decided to cease the production of their horror remakes. They're going to primarily focus on original content. Of course, their next movie is The First Purge, which is a prequel to their Purge franchise. And then in 2019, they're developing a Dora the Explorer movie, which focuses on a teenage Dora. Oh. So, you know, and now we're all waiting in line for that. So, Justin, as someone who has watched and been a big advocate for these horror remakes, does this make you happy, sad?
I think it's just a cyclical thing. I'm fine with it. I know that there will always be horror remakes, and whether they come from Platinum Dunes or someone else, it's inevitable. Inevitable. Things are inevitably going to change. I'm not worried at all in the least bit. I think that they have hit some of the big ones, and that's important. But I'm looking forward to new and original content. They are also the same folks that are doing the Jack Ryan series. It's worth noting. Platinum Dunes has their finger in that pie.
Yeah, with our buddy Krasinski.
Yes.
So yeah, check it out.
But since you put that label on me, being an advocate for horror remakes, let me just explain that kids tend to be the ones that watch these horror movies. You know, like when you're a teenager, maybe even preteen, that's when you're really into watching scary movies. And if it's not relatable content, it's not going to be scary for them. So while as an adult, you cringe at the idea of remaking a Friday the 13th or a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you have to know that it is hard for a kid now that's on their phone all the time to relate to something that's happening in, you know, Texas or the Amityville Horror, unless there's a kid on their cell phone too in the movie. It's just, it's not relatable. It's pure camp, and it's not worth their time. So of all of the genres of filmmaking, I think that horror leads to the best chance of a remake and connecting with its audience. Comedy, a good comedy, is timeless. So I usually kind of get a little sad when a comedy movie is remade. Like I would drop dead if Planes, Trains, and Automobiles gets remade.
Well, you know, they're working on a female version in the vein of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's not Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I can't remember who's doing it, but it's coming.
Ah, I don't like the sound of that. I'm not ready to die yet, Dave.
I'm not ready. I need it.
But that's just one of my things. Yeah. Well, I might not enjoy the remake, but I'll definitely go see it, and I understand the need for it.
Right.
But I mean, what the hell was that movie? Evil Dead. I love that movie. That remake was fantastic. I gave it an A. It is a it sets the bar ridiculously high for all horror remakes. Familiar concept, new cast, and they still found ways to sort of reinvent that franchise.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Justin, Platinum Doom Defender since 06.
Well, no, because the two movies that I like the most that are horror remakes are Hills Have Eyes, which has nothing to do with Platinum Dunes, and then Evil Dead, which is also not on the list, the filmography of Platinum Dunes.
Oh. I always knew you were a Michael Bay hater.
No. I love Michael Bay movies. They're fun.
He's a talented filmmaker. Speaking of movies in the vein of a Michael Bay movie, did you see the Meg trailer?
Yes, I've watched it 1,000 times. I love it.
That YouTube is now curating you shark content.
Yeah. It's like all real life Megalodon stuff, and the top 10 worst places to swim, and all these funny things. I was like, oh shit, know your audience, right? I cannot wait. It has Jason Statham, whom I love and adore, and he's going to be beating the shit out of a giant shark. I'll take it. What's there not to like?
Yeah, nothing. Everything is there to love. The thing I wasn't crazy about the Bobby Darin music. I could have done without that, but other than that, the whole trailer had the visuals that I loved. You know, that the little girl staring out the window and this giant ass shark just staring right back at her. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh.
And unapologetically tries to eat her.
Right. It's like, you look tasty.
Yeah, like a little snack.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great visuals like that. There's the whole stinger at the end where you just see underneath through this clear water this giant shark coming up, and it's going to swallow this giant boat hole.
Yeah, that's big. I mean, that's bigger than the bite radius that you see when it's going to attack the little girl, which is a little weird.
Force perspective.
Yeah. It's Hollywood. Exactly. I mean, this coming from the guy that loves the Sharknado movie. I didn't watch any of the other ones. I just kind of left it as a lightning in a bottle kind of franchise. And so I didn't want to watch the other ones and be disappointed and hate them. So I only ever watched the first one.
Yeah, all the other ones, they realized what people loved about the first one and then tried to just top it. Mm-hmm. And then they had to top that on the third one and then with the fourth one and now the fifth one. So
it's like sharks in space and shit.
Yeah, and so they all had the gag at the end that was unrealistic, you know, way to escape a shark, and they had to just keep pushing on that, and it, you know, just became it when it's already an absurd concept and you're taking it to absurd levels from the absurdity, you know, it goes bad quick.
Yeah, crazy,
real bad.
But I can't wait. I'm really excited. I like the cast. I think it's going to be fun.
Sharks.
And we were talking about this movie, I feel like, I don't know, maybe like a year and a half, 2 years ago. And we were like, all right, Jason Statham, Megalodon, let's do it.
Yeah, yeah, we've been talking about it because it's based off of a very popular book that is, I guess beloved. No, not Jaws. a book called Meg. And I think that's the first time I tried to bring it up to you. You thought I was just making sure.
I thought it was a lie. I'm like, no way.
Jason Statham in a shark movie?
his kung fu moves would be slowed down in water.
Speaking of the book, Jaws, I found my new favorite YouTube channel is called Cinefix, C-I-N-E-F-I-X, and they do a series called What's the Difference? And they take popular novels and movies and, you know, kind of break down what the differences are. And they focus, you know, primarily on, like, the big names, like The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbits, you know, Harry Potter's and whatnot. But they do a lot of, you know, like, more obscure ones, like they did, not that Jaws is obscure, but... And, you know, they did Jaws, you know, they did, like, Die Hard, they did all of the bunch of the comic books and stuff like that, and they're all, like, 9 minutes, and it's really actually really interesting, and they put a lot of animation, they do a lot of, like scenes from the films and stuff like that, so it's definitely worth checking out if you're like me and you're always interested on what's changed from the source material, because I know a lot of people say that Jaws is not a good book, and so I was just curious what the main differences were. And, like, in the Jaws book, like, Brody's wife and Hooper are having an affair.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's like, I'm like, whoa. And, like, the ending, like, you know, how everyone dies is different, and just, and, like, the overall ending of the book is different, and it's very interesting.
that's nuts. I had no idea. I also didn't know that John Turteltaub, the guy that's directing Meg, is the same guy that brought me Three Ninjas and Cool Runnings. That just is amazing to me. I love those, like, three stoner surfer guys that are trying to get the kids. They're like, oh, little dudes, we're not going to hurt you. We're just going to kidnap you.
I remember my favorite scene of Three Ninjas is when the stoner actually get in the house and they're hiding behind this, like, little tiny plant. And they're just like, shut up, dude, shut up, dude.
That's just comedy gold, man. I love that. The movie itself isn't terribly impressive, but those three guys bring it to a new level. Elevate it to new heights.
That's right. And Hulk Hogan is in the third Three Ninjas movie.
Oh, my. That's intense. But yeah. Cool Runnings, love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Instinct, I actually enjoy that one. I think that's a fun one. Sort of a... It's like, ooh, man versus wild.
Wild wins.
Yeah.
Always does.
And you know how I feel about National Treasure.
Yeah. I was just reading an article about why there will not be a National Treasures 3. I was like,
why is that?
The article was clearly dated because it was talking about how busy and in demand Nicolas Cage is.
Oh, yeah.
Citing movies like Ghost Rider and Ghost Rider 2. I'm like, you might be in fault.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, I even really like Phenomenon. I remember seeing Phenomenon. It was a summer movie, and that was back when, like, there were Edwards, you know, before the Arrow became Regal, and, like, on Tuesdays, it was, like, $1 to see a movie or something like that. Like, they had, like, Tuesday movie nights or something like that, and I remember going to the Irvine Spectrum. I took my brother and my sister, and I paid for them, and, it was fun.
No, they owe you. They owe you money.
Yeah, they owe me $2.
Even call them and collect.
Yeah.
Shit.
He also directed Last Vegas.
Oh.
It's a bunch of old people going to Vegas. Morgan Freeman, Michael Douglas, Robert De Niro, Kevin Kline.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm talking about. Let's move on then to subjects that everyone loves, the real crowd pleasers of the elderly abuse. Have you seen this story? I think it's either on Variety or The Hollywood Reporter about elder abuse on Stan Lee by his daughter?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
That's just so sad, you know, talking about people saying that, you know, they're just using and abusing him, you know, trying to get as much, you know, money out of him as he can, like by doing appearances and signings, you know, that she's fired key people in his life and she's having him sign over all of these things. And, you know, it's just really sad. And just to put a semi-personal spin on it, you know, Randy and I, we directed the movie Now Stop to Comic Con, which won some awards. And one of the awards we won was actually given to us by Stan Lee. You know, he was the one who was one of the judges to vote on it. And one of the prizes we won was we got a meet and greet with Stan Lee. You know, so our meet and greet was like 6 seconds, basically. But, you know, that's still pretty cool. And I can tell you that he had no idea we were there. Like he was, they were just ushering him through and forward. I don't want to say I felt bad for him, but it was just like, you know, it was kind of sad. And, you know, while I'm gracious that I got my 6 seconds of personal time with Mr. Lee and I got an autograph from him and stuff like that, I could tell that he probably should have been relaxing somewhere, not spending 9 hours at a convention. And that's one of the other allegations they allege, is that he's just working himself to death at these conventions. They're not giving him breaks. You know, there's lines of like 1,000 people and they're just having him sit there and sign these pictures and sign these autographs, take these pictures with people. And again, these are all allegations. You know, none of this is not allegations we're leveling. This is allegations that Variety or Hollywood Reporter was leveling. But if any of this is true, I mean, it's just terrible for such an American treasure like Stan Lee. So I don't know if you had anything to add, Justin, other than fuck people who abuse elderly.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, man. That breaks my heart. If I was in my 90s, there's no way anybody would be dragging me anywhere. I would be on my own agenda.
Unless they're dragging me to the bathroom because I can't pee for myself.
Right. No, that's terrible. I mean, I remember it was like, I don't know, four years ago with maybe even longer with the Geeky Awards, where you were like, man, that guy has no business being here. Like, he just looks like he's just over it.
Yeah, it was just, you know, sad. And I don't know, it doesn't seem like he needs, it's, you know, because you always hear about these, you know, famous people who, you know, didn't save their money or this or that, and, you know, they have to do all this stuff later in life because they have no money left. But I don't think that's the case for Stan Lee, and it all seems to have begun when his, you know, Stan Lee was married to the same woman for 60-something years, and she unfortunately passed away last year. And we got the impression that, you know, she was the one who handled all of his affairs. You know, she was obviously the beneficiary and the executor of all of his, you know, personal stuff. But when she left, you know, when he has to find a new executor and everything like that for his estate, that's when it sounds like the daughter stepped in and, you know, really started to take advantage of her father, allegedly. And it's just really sad that this could happen.
Right.
Hopefully, bringing light to the subject, you know, maybe something can happen, but it's always weird in families when someone is old or, you know, unfortunately passes away.
Yeah, family goes crazy, dude. Everyone wants a piece. They all want money. Relationships get ruined because of it. It's terrible.
Even when there's not a ton left. I remember when my grandmother passed away, you know, she didn't have a ton, you know, but what few scraps she had, you know, she had 4 children, my mother included. And I remember watching my mother just, like, fall to pieces because she was being bullied by, you know, 1 or 2 of her siblings because they wanted more than their fair share.
And crazy.
I remember my mom got like almost nothing from my grandmother's estate because she didn't want to fight with her siblings over like her deceased mother's property.
Right. Yeah. That's terrible.
Yeah. That's why everyone needs to put their shit in writing.
Right. I know that he was, Stan Lee supposedly said that these reports were inaccurate and ludicrous, but, so I mean, there is that.
Well, that's good news.
Who knows? I have a soft spot for the elderly, and I hate the idea of someone being mistreated. It's terrible.
Yes. Be nice to be excellent to each other is your
right. Theater. Like you think of like Happy Gilmore and Ben Stiller's character in their retirement home, and it's so sad because that shit has to happen. You know, people just get bullied and beaten and worked to death, and when it's your own family doing something like that, it's just disgusting.
There is no excuse.
No.
Well, let's move on. Let's finish up on a happier story. Black Panther, the movie that just keeps on coming, is now the number 3 movie domestically at the box office. It passed Titanic. And I remember when Titanic became the highest grossing film of all time, I never thought any of its records would ever be broken. This was just a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And, you know, while it held on for quite a while, you know, good for it, you know, held on for 12 years, you know, through inflation and everything like that, until Avatar passed it in 2009. And then, of course, The Force Awakens passed it in 2015. Titanic, for me, is always that box office juggernaut. It was number 1 at the box office for, like, 13 weeks in a row. And, you know, it was a different time for box office. You know, the average ticket price was something like $3.50, to where now the average ticket price is like $14 or something ridiculous. So for it to still be in the same breath as modern blockbusters is a huge deal, but this was kind of like the big milestone for Black Panther, to where I was like, you know, obviously I knew it was a big hit, but once you start getting into Titanic levels, you know, that's huge. It has an outside chance to catch Avatar. It would be difficult. Obviously, it's not going to catch Force Awakens. It's like $300 million away from Force Awakens. But, you know, kudos to Black Panther for continuing its dominance.
Yeah, absolutely. E.T. is now ranked 17th. And that was like the movie to beat when I was a kid, right? Uh-huh. It's like, man, nothing's ever going to make $435 million or whatever. And you're just like, oh my goodness. And now it's almost like, should we even make a sequel if it makes $400 million? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that, you know, I think they're going to have to eventually go to the adjusted ticket price. I know the studios don't want to do it because it makes better headlines. Black Panther, number three greatest movie of all time.
Yeah, but it's also like $13 to see it.
Right. I really think they need to go to the, you know, how many tickets did you sell, not how much money did you make.
Right.
Because the adjusted is, you know, Gone with the Wind is number one with $1.8 billion. Star Wars is number two with $1.6 billion. These are domestic grosses. Sound of Music at 1.3, E.T. at 1.3, and Titanic at 1.2, rounding out the top five.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Titanic, the newest movie on here is number 11, The Force Awakens, would be 11th. But other than that, Avatar is at 15.
Yeah, so the number one movie right now gets dropped all the way to 11th. That says a lot.
Mm-hmm.
As far as ticket sales go. Quantity.
Yeah.
Butts in seats,
yo.
Interesting. But yeah. Either way, I mean, Black Panther was incredible. I'm glad it was such a commercial success. So many repeat viewers. Everyone loved it so much they had to go see it again and again and again and again. And it was fun. It was such a fun movie. And yeah. You know, you even mentioned that you know, the villain this time around is a well developed character and gave Loki a run for his money, so yeah. Much needed in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, Black Panther is number 33 in the adjusted list.
Wow.
Yeah, it's three in the unadjusted list. So. Obviously, ticket prices, they have changed.
Sure. Especially when you account like 3D and IMAX experiences, then you start paying quite a lot of money per ticket.
We want the money, Lebowski.
Yeah. But good shit, man.
It is. Well, that is all I have. You got anything else?
I got nothing.
All right. Well, make sure that you give us a big old like and a follow on all our social medias at Geek Legacy on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all of those. And next time you're at geeklegacy.com, make sure you listen to the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Stephen K. James. And until next time, we will talk to you a different time.